This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and you remember when I promised you that I'm really going to be trying to bring you more joy, more mindfulness, and manifestation techniques to help you all find tools to access the love and joy and peace that resides in all of us? Well, you're in for a real treat today, because with us in studio is a wonderful person who embodies, teaches, and lives joy to the fullest. Today, I'm joined by joy expert and author, Lisa McCourt. And before we meet her, let me tell you a little bit about her. Lisa has taught joy in its many flavors for over two decades to thousands of learners, incorporating the techniques she's gathered from studying with and writing for many of the biggest names in the transformational world. In addition to operating Joy School, what a delightful name, Lisa is a best-selling author and ghostwriter specializing in the field of personal transformation. Her joyful passion for the power of words has propelled a very diverse publishing career, studded with industry awards, starred reviews, international honors, and mega sales. If you have kids, you might have read I Love You, Stinky Face, which is wonderful. So if you haven't read it, I encourage you to get it. Under her own name, Lisa has penned over 40 books for adults and children, in addition to collaborating with industry leaders such as Jack Canfield, who's been on this show, Mark Victor Hansen, and more. Combined, her books have sold over, get this, 9 million copies, wow, and earned over 9,000 glowing Amazon reviews. And her books have been published by the very famous Hay House Books, Scholastic, HarperCollins, Penguin Random House, McGraw-Hill, and many more. Her books have also won publishing awards, been featured on Lifetime's TV, CNN, and PBS, garnering praise from over 200 publication reviewers, and been translated into 11 languages. On the secret side of Lisa's publishing path, she's been the silent ghostwriter for many prominent thought leaders, from New York Times bestselling authors to Emmy and Golden Globe nominated Hollywood stars. Her clients have appeared on Oprah, Good Morning America, Saturday Night Live, The Dr. Oz Show, ABC's 2020, The View, The Today Show, and The Dr. Phil Show. Wow. As a proud mom of a transgender daughter, she is also president of her local flag chapter, the country's oldest and largest LGBTQ plus support organization. A former popular CBS radio host, podcaster, Do Joy is the name of that podcast, and joyful singer, I knew it. I knew there was a singer in there, in Michael Beckwith's Global Agape Choir. She brings her passion and unique blend of skill sets to an eclectic career path that is ever mysteriously unfolding just the way she likes it. And today it's going to continue. Lisa McCourt, welcome to Finding Your Bliss, and congratulations on your beautiful book, Free Your Joy.
Oh my goodness, Judy, that was the longest bio that's out there. Usually that's not one of these things. So it's like, wow, the bio's still out there. Wow. Thank you. That was a little no pressure rollout there.
You've done it all. I always think to myself, if someone has spent the time doing all of this education and all of this writing and getting all of these accolades, we got to mention it, right? Let's talk about Free Your Joy. It's like a Bible for happiness and joy. There's so much to it. I actually said to my producer, I hope we can fit this into an hour because there's so much there. Can you tell us what inspired you to write this beautiful book, Your Brainchild, Free Your Joy?
Oh, thank you. Yes. This was a very easy book to write because it all just came directly from my Joy School. So I had written a book in 2012 with Hay House that had my joy trainings, my sort of like blueprint for this is what we do in Joy School. And it was actually, this book was at the suggestion of one of the editors that I had, you know, worked with previously, you know, in publishing. And she had said, hey, it's been like 10 years. Do you have any updates that you want to? I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. We're doing like so much new now, so much different, even though the core basic principles are the same. It was really just, I don't know that I would have thought of it myself because I had just gotten so passionate about the teaching and being there. Writing, I like writing, but it's a very isolating profession. And I had actually already put aside the ghostwriting and decided, no, I just want to be in the room where it's happening.
Yes. Right?
With the people having the transformations. This is what floats my whole joy around doing this. But then when the opportunity came to write the book, I was like, yes, I do want to leave that legacy. Even if that's all it is, I want to update the last time that I told everybody what we do in Joy School.
So can you tell us what you do in Joy School? Like, I know you offer 12 keys to sustainable happiness, and we're going to be talking about all of these keys throughout the interview. But what I found fascinating was when you started, you admitted that you weren't always a joyful person. And you said you had on the perma smile, which a lot of people have. The smile, you make everybody else feel good, but you were not really feeling joyful inside. And you actually found your own roadmap for how to connect to that joy. And I'm wondering if you could just take us back to that time and what it was that made you be able to connect to your own joy so that you could really teach it to other people.
I mean, just going way far back, I was just a horrifically shy child. I had a lot of anxiety for years and years. I had a horrible condition of like big blisters, boils on my palms and my feet, which was an anxiety condition. I didn't talk in school. Teachers, you know, would call in my mom and they thought I was mute because I couldn't express myself. I was so sort of shut down. And when I would write on the papers, it would just be barely legible. It would look like I was handing in a blank test because wow. I was so afraid to express myself. And now I talk and write for a living. But I think that it was in my early adulthood, and I have friends who do this work who had some dark night of the soul and they had a visitation or they had some very dramatic, beautiful story. I always kind of wish I had a story like that. For me, it was really about, it was about books and teachers. And that's what led me to want to do this work. It was about getting my hands on a few, my very first spiritual book. I have no idea how I got my hands on it. I wish I had recorded that in my journal, but it was Wayne Dyer's Your Erroneous Zones.
Yes.
And I was 14 because in my 14-year-old journal, which I still have, I had just copied pages and pages in my little 14-year-old handwriting of Wayne Dyer's words. And it was like, there's a person on the planet who understands me, who sees the world the way I do, who feels the way I do. And I had, up until that moment, just felt like an alien walking this planet, right? Yes. I felt like nobody understands me or sees me or gets me. And then once I got a little older and realized that this was just one representation of a whole kind of book, genre of study that I could go into, it was just such a strong pull for me. Yeah. So I did it on the QT for a long time in my 20s because I still wanted to fit in. And, you know, weirdos like us, we don't fit in so well with young people from that time, especially.
Right.
So it was very much a closet obsession, but I did the courses. I did TM. I used to be really, really involved in TM for a long time, and Buddhism. When I was in college, I did comparative religion and studied Buddhism and the Vedas and all the ancient scriptures. So it just was such a rightness. It was I feel at home here in a way that I've never felt at home anywhere.
And I get that.
It just unfolded from
me. I so get that. So as you've said, your book draws a lot on your Joy School training. And I'm wondering if you could just paint us a picture. I've seen pictures of you in the Joy School and I've read about it, but what actually happens? It's almost like everyone's sitting in a circle. Can you paint us a picture of what happens? People are from all these ages and stages and every kind of person you can imagine, young and old, shapes and sizes are in this room together. What happens?
Yeah. Well, you're describing one of our in-person retreats, which is not the biggest aspect of Joy School these days, just because ever since COVID, I haven't really had a regular ongoing in-person group. Most of it is in a Zoom room, but that's not as photogenic. So on the website, you'll see lots of in-person gatherings. I do on occasion have one-off events down here in South Florida. And we go on the premise that all of us, every single person walking the planet, is joy and love and peace and bliss at our core. That's what we come here as. That's the field we come here from. That is our core essence. And the only reason that most of us are not experiencing that on a day-to-day basis is the things that we've accumulated in this journey here in our human suit. When we get here, we are wide, wide, wide open, just a pure, pure little being of love, expecting that to be our experience. And that's not going to be the case for most of us, no matter how well-meaning our parents are, what, you know, whatever great parents we have. I don't like to parent bash, and I never do, because parents are only operating from their own limitations and what they've been taught and what they've been given in their human suits. So we start accumulating all of these obstructions, these beliefs, these definitions for what things are here. And that becomes the filter. We call it the filter in Joy School, the blinders that we go on to create our experiences from and attract experiences. And so Joy School is just entirely about identifying, gently releasing those obstructions, just to clear that filter away to become the joyful essence that we all are at our core.
I just want to ask you what the difference is between joy and happiness, because you say there's a difference.
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah, happiness is a lovely state of being that we all aspire to, and we should, and why not? You know, that's definitely what we're here for. But we really would not be happy 24/7. It wouldn't even serve us. If we didn't have any contrasting emotions, we wouldn't even know we were happy, right? We would just get bored with happiness. So we can feel joy 24/7, even though we wouldn't feel happiness 24/7, when we learn to completely embrace with full compassion all the spectrum of emotions that are available to us human creatures, when we can have joy in our anger, joy in our sadness, joy in our frustration, when we get behind it and learn to just, ooh, this is a fun challenge. It's like in Joy School, we always say that our day is a game board, right? You wake up to this game board of your life. We play games because we enjoy that mix of the beauty and the challenges. It's something that's sort of fun for us. We need to start looking at our lives in the same way and just enjoying the challenges, enjoying the emotions that we typically push away and repress.
Absolutely. I want to start doing a deep dive in the book. And one of the qualities that comprises an inner landscape of joy is this wonderful phrase you call grounded serenity. And it's interesting because we started off this interview off camera with a little breathing, but grounded serenity and how we can learn to build that muscle of authentic non-reactivity. And that means that we don't react to every little thing that happens, negative or otherwise. And we all do this, right? So I'd love to hear how this muscle can be strengthened. And what a game changer it can be when we have the ability to achieve this beautiful calmness in our minds and hearts. Can you tell us more about grounded serenity? What a gorgeous phrase.
Yeah. It begins really with becoming the observer of our thoughts and feelings. It's called witness consciousness in Eastern traditions. Once we have an awareness of those beliefs that we formed early on, like, we can sort of notice that almost always our gut instinct, our impulse to do, right? Something bumps up against us. We feel our serenity knocked off course by that thing out there.
Right.
And we realize it's never really that thing out there, but it's about some stored pocket of pain that we have, because we all store away these pockets of pain and trauma. That's even like understood in science today. Like, really brilliant scientists talk about this. There's biochemistry involved. When we recognize it's not about that, it's about something in me, we learn the skill of relaxing into the feeling so that we can allow that stored pain to come up, because our more typical reactions are to go do something about it, say something to stop it, try to change what's going on out there.
Yes.
And we can start to be the observer that that never serves. It never serves us. And we're just going to perpetuate that pattern until we learn to, we call it cleaning up the internal landscape. When our internal landscape is clear, we can learn to love ourselves into release of whatever we're blaming out there for triggering us. It's in here, and we can heal it in here without worrying about what's out there. And that's grounded serenity.
Even later on in the book, you talk about the clear glass of water and pouring over and over the clear glass of water and getting rid of the sludge. I think you might use another word, but the sludge on the bottom. And that's a process. And I know you get very into that, but it's quite fascinating when you follow it. You say this is not something you can do like in a week or in 3 months, that the process of doing this whole journey to freeing your joy takes about a year. Why is it so long?
I've just found that for somebody to really believe that they could turn their whole experience of life around in a week or a month, or if we really believed it, we could do it that quick. We could read the book and do it. But we're not programmed to believe that. Right. So, and I've just learned through my own journey that it's really about integration. You can go on that weekend retreat and have those glitzy aha moments and think like, everything's changed for me now. But it's about integrating it into our lives. So that's why the book is structured as a year-long journey, I've had lots of readers tell me they've done it much quicker and had great success. So more power to you if that's what anybody decides. I would never argue with anybody who wants to do that. I just really, really want it to work for people. So I feel like by encouraging them to spread it out and take really good time to integrate each concept, that it's just going to have a higher probability of success.
So true. And we're going to get into the kerplunk. I want to say the word correctly later on that you talk about. You have this fabulous word about that moment when it happens. And it's always so delightful. And we all know that moment, the Lucille Ball aha moment, when it just all comes together and you just go, yes, I get this. Let's talk about it. What it's, you call it the kerplunk?
I call it kerclunk. I don't know why, but a lot of people say kerplunk. That must be a more familiar term. I think it's fine either way. But yeah, it's about like, you know, oh, today we're going to talk about present moment awareness. And everyone goes, ah, present moment awareness. I've learned about that my whole life. Mindfulness. Yeah, I get it. Be here now. Gotcha. You know, Ram Dass, whatever. But then they go and they hear how somebody else in the group has applied it, or they try out a specific exercise around it in their life. And then all of a sudden, it's like it's an entirely new concept because it's embodied and they feel it. And it's like, for the first time ever, I understand what this is about. This isn't just this boring thing that I've been like hearing and reading about my whole life. You know, it's just an example. And sometimes it just takes repetition because so much out there in our day-to-day lives is counter to the kinds of truths that we keep coming back to in Joy School and with much, you know, any spiritual training, really. It's so counter to what we're bombarded with that we have to, you know, there's a quantity issue. Yes. We just have to keep seeing it, keep looking at it from different angles, different ways and examples. And then it clunks. And then it's a part of you. Then you never go back.
Didn't you say somewhere in the book that it took Malcolm Gladwell, it talks about the 10,000 hours, and you've definitely devoted more than 10,000 hours to this. And there's something to be said for putting that 10,000 hours into something to really get it. And what a great thing to get, to free your joy and have more joy accessible to you. It's pretty cool. Present moment immersion, you just touched on that and how to live more fully in that state. I'm a meditation teacher, so I get that. Even meditation teachers don't always live in that present moment immersion. What is a way or a tip on how to achieve that?
Yeah, I think, again, it comes down to the skill of mastering witness consciousness, right? Because when we notice our thoughts and we notice that when we're having an anxiety about the future, it pulls down our energy. When we're running something from the past, it pulls down our energy. When we start noticing that, it's just, why would I do that sort of a thing? When we're right here now is the only time that we're really experiencing reality, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're just living in abstractions, right? Our brain abstractions. The past is an illusion because none of us is remembering objective past. We're remembering the past that we perceived through our filter of beliefs, which is hugely limiting and erroneous and doesn't lead to anything real. The future, of course, isn't real yet. It could go in a million different ways, right? So being in the moment is the only time that we're ever actually experiencing reality directly. Mm-hmm. And usually the reality that's around us in that moment is pretty pleasant for most of us most of the time, unless we're being waterboarded in the moment, which it's not the case for most of us doing this kind of work.
Do you recommend meditating every day? You have some beautiful meditation breathwork pieces in the book. And I know you work a lot with Scott Stabile, who is like a brother to you. And of course, he has been on our show as well. How often do we have to meditate to really strengthen that muscle?
Yeah, I don't like to be prescriptive with meditation because so many people have come into Joy School saying, don't ask me to meditate. I've tried that. Doesn't work for me. It's not my jam. So it's really just about taking time to be silent with ourselves. And that can look like a walk in nature. That can look like a bath, or, you know, there are so many ways to take that time. But if we're resistant to that, we just want to look at, why is the resistance there? What's in there that we're avoiding feeling? Right. What are we afraid might come up? So we do some work around that. But I do offer different ways to either go in and be still and be quiet with yourself. Mm-hmm. A lot of ways to do that. Meditation's my favorite. It's the most, I quote meditation because there's so much good science around meditation. And I have skeptics at Joy School. I'm kind of a bridge brand. I don't always attract like the spiritual diehard people who have been studying it for a long time. I get the cuspers. So they like to see the science around, you know, the statistics on meditation. But you can sing, that like moving energy through you is another way to kind of clear out the channels. We're just wanting to you know, the Satanama practice is really, really beautiful and powerful. And some of this stuff is ancient and goes back, and we don't even understand why it works as well as it does. But our ancestors understood. Our ancestors were so much wiser in so many ways. So yeah, I don't like to say you have to do a minute. Like when I work with private clients, we start with, okay, what do we have in your day? Do we have 30 minutes? Do we have 10 minutes? Do we have
right.
5 minutes?
Let's find some time.
Find something that works best for whatever they're willing to commit. And then they see how great it is and they inch it up and commit more and more.
Yes, that's the best. You don't prescribe this huge amount of time. Say, do it for 2 to 5 minutes in whatever way you wish. Walking, sitting, lying down, thinking, moving, cooking, so many different things. And then, oh, just do it for 2 minutes. And then often people will want to add more time to that when you haven't sort of said it's important that you achieve that. You also talk about the namaste lens in your book, Juicy Joy. And we know that namaste means the divine in me recognizes and honors the divine in you. So how do we install the namaste lens into our everyday vision? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break. More with Lisa McCourt and Finding Your Bliss. And we come back in a moment. This segment is brought to you by silveringbeauty.com. If you are one of the growing number of modern women embracing their grays, get ready to love your hair even more. Silvering has the first beauty line with cosmetics and hair care products designed to unleash the dynamic beauty found in natural silver, gray, and white hair. My friends are loving this next evolution of their beauty with products made just for them. Products that add shine, boost volume and tone. There are even products for eyebrows too. Learn more about the modern approach to silver-haired beauty over at silveringbeauty.com.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, we are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740. And I was just asking you, Lisa, about how we install the namaste lens into our everyday vision.
So much of what drags down our vibration, limits our access to the joyful core beings that we all are, is our judgments. We judge ourselves and we judge others. And we have a whole chapter on shadow work to show that the judgments of others always are somehow rooted in judgment of self. But the namaste lens is just such a tremendous boost to our vibration because it doesn't feel good to judge people. It doesn't feel good to judge ourselves. It doesn't feel good to judge others because it's not in alignment with our soul nature. Our soul doesn't judge anybody. Our soul understands that filter of beliefs. Everybody's subject to one. And none of us are seeing reality objectively. Right? Objectivity is a unicorn. We're all seeing reality through a keyhole of perception and none of our keyholes are lined up. And deeply coming to understand that makes it really hard to judge anyone. Mm-hmm. It's like they came to the conclusion they came to or the behavior that they're exhibiting through what was installed in their brain program. Our brains are just computers that can only run the programs that they've been installed with, right?
Yes.
It's not their true nature. It's not the soul being behind that behavior or the words coming out of their mouth. They just got installed with some programs that are different from ours.
Absolutely. We know the judgment's not a good thing, that's for sure. And you also talk about the value of unwavering faith and the concept of looking at life expecting an optimistic outcome. I always think of my late father. He always believed things were going to work out. He always had a hopeful, sunny, optimistic kind of way of looking at it, which I think ended up making his life more hopeful and optimistic and positive. And you can also expect a pessimistic outcome. Can you say more just about that idea of unwavering faith? Is it fake or does it really work?
That's where there's the discernment practice because people who are saying affirmations, you know, I am smart and capable, if every time you say that, it reminds you that deep down you don't think you're smart and capable. It's doing more harm to your energy, to your vibration than good. So it's about finding the exact sweet spot where you can believe something, right? Yes. Because we're always creating our next reality based on our expectations.
Lovely.
And everybody wants to manifest. And I always say your manifestations can never outrun your deep down beliefs in your own deservingness and what you are able to create for yourself. If you don't believe it, your manifestations can't outrun that. So it's really about shifting up those expectations from whatever spot we can find that we can authentically put our faith into it.
What a lovely thought that is. Like, I love what you just said, because it's finding your own sweet spot, which is going to be different from somebody else's sweet spot. It's yours. And that's what's going to make it even more authentic. Yeah, though, this is incredible stuff. So in the flow is another huge key to finding joy. We talk about this a lot. I'm a life coach, you know, being in flow. And when you're in flow, that's often a clue that you're in the right place. And how, when things start to change, how we get uncomfortable, we feel out of control. Can you tell us more about being in flow and being okay with whatever happens? Something comes to change your course. You don't fall apart. You can't control others. All you can control is yourself. How do you stay in this beautiful state of in flow?
Again, in Joy School, we do it by sort of like practicing and incorporating some really, we got to get kerclunked on some realizations. Yeah. And anytime that we catch ourselves wanting to change or fix anyone or anything out there, mm-hmm. we catch that thinking and we see that we're looking in the wrong direction. Anything out there that feels like it requires us to manipulate it, control it, fix it in any way yes. is showing yes. us we need to turn around the way we're looking and look inside yes. and not ask, how can I change that? But why am I not okay with that? Mm-hmm. What is it in me that's causing this whoosh of resistance to mm-hmm. that? And we heal that. You know, we have to heal our own resistance to it. Not to say that everything is perfect out there and we shouldn't try to make improvements to the world around us, but we're going to be so much more effective in our attempts to up-level a situation, up-level a cause that we believe in once we lose our resistance to it. It's the mm-hmm. resistance that we're putting that focus on, the energy on our resistance is actually mm-hmm. keeping it stuck energetically. So it's about catching ourselves mm-hmm. when we're in resistance to something and seeing how to apply that understanding to up-leveling our internal landscape. And then that goes on to up-level the external landscape. We don't have to do that. We don't have to go out there and try to change things. We up-level what's in here and we experience a different reality out there.
I love that. I love when you talk about awe and our propensity for awe. And I think back to being in university and walking along one day, and I was in musical theater art school and just feeling so grateful that there was this land with these people that were like me, that were, you know, artists, who are a little different than the average person, and who all thought this very cool way. And I remember seeing this bird on a branch and just thinking, oh my God, like the world is wondrous. And just thinking, feeling a sense of kinship with nature and really feeling awe and loving the feeling so much that I just couldn't move. I just stood there in awe and in joy and in all this. Now, this doesn't happen every day. I don't even think for a yogi, you can experience that sense of awe every minute. But I remember it was so glorious and wanting to re-experience moments like that even more. So how important is it to derive a sense of awe and wonder for moments and events in your life? And is there a way to even create more opportunities for seeing awe in everything?
Yeah, for sure. So love your description of your moment. I feel like I could feel you. I could feel your energy change as you were talking about it. I'm sure your listeners could feel it. We do that in Joy School. We look back at those moments because all that is a moment when we're clear. There's nothing special about that moment. Birds have been in trees your whole life, right? You've seen a lot of birds in trees.
Yeah.
So it's not like we think we have all these preferences, these things that we like and dislike. And usually it's just because somewhere in our memory banks, we had a moment close to that moment of just being clearly who we are in the presence of somebody wearing a blue dress. So now we think that we like blue dresses. You know, like it's usually mm-hmm. our likes and dislikes are so weirdly programmed in there. They usually have nothing to do with the things themselves, but it just happened to be something that coincided with a time when we felt the truth of our soul. And that's what you felt in that moment. And nature is a great way to experience that. A lot of people feel it in nature. A lot of people feel it through beautiful music or seeing a sunset or holding a baby. Or, you know, there are a lot of sort of common triggers we can point to. But for whatever the circumstances were around you, in that moment, your filter dropped. Mm-hmm. And so we use these moments as incentive because I think it is accessible to all of us all the time. Just hardly any of us have done that degree of clearing work. Mm-hmm. But the more that you clear what's inside you, those stored pockets of lower frequencies that we all have stored, the more you do the work of releasing them, the more frequent those moments become. Mm-hmm. Because all it is a peek at you without your stuff.
You also say to make this book work for you, you have to journal your feelings and get in touch with your feelings and really, really journal. Like it's not journaling aimlessly. You suggest prompts. I love when you say, what would you love? What would you love? And just write everything. In fact, I asked my producer yesterday, write everything that you would love to see. What would you love? And I said, just don't tell me. It's your private thing. Just write it all down until you have nothing more to say. Can you say any more about that?
Yeah.
Great exercise.
I don't want to scare your listeners by saying you must journal. I am fairly insistent in the beginning of the book that I want you to have a journal. Just get a journal. A journal. Have it there with you. Have it right there next to you.
Yes.
Journal to the extent that you're able at this time and comfortable.
Yes.
But sometimes it's not even about what we think of as a regular journaling practice. Like you mentioned, sometimes it's just list making. Sometimes it's just in case a memory comes up with this, you want a place to jot it down. So as much as I understand the therapeutic benefits of journaling and encourage it throughout the book, it's not imperative. There are ways to get around if you're just somebody who's like, I don't like that. I don't sound good when I journal. You know, that's the first rule is release all judgment of your writing, spelling, grammar. It doesn't matter at all. So yes to that. And you asked about making a list of what you love, Yeah. So it's just part of a little series of questions that we want to get used to asking ourselves, what would I love? Because when we are living in kind of a closed down state, we subscribe to this illusion that we're stuck in our circumstances, right? We have this like this false cage that none of us truly is experiencing, but we think we're experiencing it. It's the, you know, again, these brain programs that are in there. So asking what would I love? Sometimes it's a really, really simple thing. You know, I'd love a brownie sundae, and you can put on your calendar, go next week and get yourself a damn brownie sundae. And then, you know,
it doesn't have to be so deep, right? It doesn't have to be so like cataclysmic.
I apologize, healthy friends. Don't call me out on that. But, and sometimes you say, what would I love? And it feels unobtainable. And it feels like this huge thing that like, oh, what I would really love is to be out of this marriage. Or, you know, what I would really love is my own job, my own company where I'm doing, you know, XYZ thing. But even if it doesn't feel obtainable, hopefully the other tools in the book by that point have shown you that just allowing yourself to have that vision, to have that idea, to have that focus, it opens the energetic pathways for getting there. And the more you can raise your vibration to meet it, the more the steps will just magically appear. They just do. The steps to getting you to anything that you've identified that you would love, they start appearing as you raise your vibration to mm-hmm. see them.
That's beautiful. There's also something that made me cry in the book. And that was where you talk about a very compassionate piece that you learned from your dear friend and colleague, Scott Stabile, who of course wrote Big Love and Enough As You Are. And that is to be kind to yourself, put your hand over your heart and speak to yourself the way you would to a small child and say to yourself, when you're being hard on yourself, it's okay, honey, you're human. Instead of beating yourself up. And I don't know why something about that just really caught in my throat and made me feel very emotional because we don't do that. We don't take ourselves by the hand the way we would a small child and put our hand on our heart, on our fourth chakra and say exactly that. It's okay, honey, you're human. That's so lovely. Yeah. Can you say more about that?
Well, first, I just want to say not everybody has the same parts, the same lines catch their heart and want to make them cry. So rub that in. That was a beautiful message for you. It sounds like that touched something in you. It's something that you want to do. And we all are too hard on ourselves. It's part of our indoctrination into this culture. It's part of that process I spoke of where our parents were always wanting us to be better and better and better. None of us really think we're worthy of the lives we want. When we get down underneath everything, usually that's the case. That's just kind of one of those core bucket beliefs that we all share. Mm-hmm. And we think, oh, if I let myself off the hook, I'm not going to be any better. And that's really not true. Because if you're focusing on all of your deficits, if you're focusing on where you're not getting the success you think you should have, or you haven't done this right, you're putting energy, you're feeding energy into that circumstance, that situation in your life. You're just keeping it alive mm-hmm. with your thoughts there. When you can say, it's okay, honey, you're human. Even if you've just done something that you feel is horrible and unforgivable, I just yelled at my child really in a way that no one should ever yell at a child. The more you can say, it's okay, honey, you're human, and get to a place of compassion for yourself, compassion for us always spills over into compassion for others. It will help yes. you to remedy the situation with genuine authenticity and compassion. When we're beating ourselves up, we tend to beat others up, and we don't relate well to others in a loving way. We don't have an energetic open space between us when we're beating ourselves up. Mm-hmm. So it's always about self-forgiveness first, and then that extends into compassion for everything and everyone.
Lovely. You refer to Eckhart Tolle when you talk about how everyone has a horizontal self and a vertical self. And you talk a lot about this throughout the book, but can you just very simplistically and briefly describe what we're doing when we're really living more with our vertical self, which I think is the better self to be connected to? We're going to learn all about the vertical self and more when we come back after this short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, we are back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. And I was just asking you, Lisa, if you could talk more about the vertical and the horizontal self.
Yeah. I mean, we're always going to be a mix of both. Nobody in this human suit sheds their horizontal self completely. It's the personality that we've constructed, cobbled together with all those beliefs, all those things that we've learned. We construct a personality to go out and be in this earth existence. So it's our name, it's our body, it's our occupation, our beliefs, our affiliations, our family placement. All of these things describe our horizontal self. Unfortunately, also in our horizontal self is the brain programs that are limiting us, the filter of beliefs, all the definitions and erroneous self-judgments that we've accrued throughout our lives. So that's why we work with the horizontal self, not because it's inherently our bad self or our wrong self. It's just that's where the problems are. That's what's keeping us from the joy that we are. Mm-hmm. Our vertical self is what's behind that. I feel mm-hmm. like it's behind. Some people experience it in a different way. It's our energetic self. If you're comfortable with your divinity, it's your connection to source. It's your soul, your spirit. People yes. have different words to describe yes. it. My friend Chris Niebauer, who I teach with, talks about it as just the consciousness behind the thinking mind. Nice. So it's what we're feeling nice. When we see that bird in the tree, and we're just right there in the oneness and bliss of consciousness.
Yes.
So that's
yes.
the vertical self. So we work more and more in Joy School to align with the vertical self and bring it more into the forefront of our lives, since that's where all our natural joy is.
Could we also say that the vertical self is the invisible self? It's the self that meditates, that the more exalted self. It's vertical. It's going up. We're not
yeah.
necessarily.
Yeah. And people have different ways. No, everybody has a different way of understanding it. That's how you experience your vertical self, which is beautiful and perfect. And that's one of the things that we, you know, work with in Joy School, because we're all going to experience it slightly differently. Yeah. But we know it when we feel it. We know we've all felt it at different times, even if we didn't notice. Our culture puts absolutely no emphasis on experiencing this part of us. And that's why it's like foreign to most people to even try to access this part of us. Other cultures in our world today access it better, and our ancestors accessed it better. But we have to kind of do a little work and investigation to be able to align with the vertical self.
So I love that you're involved, and I'm just changing gears for a minute to get to your Michael Agape Spiritual Center's Global Choir. And I've seen some of the performances, and it's quite beautiful. And it made me think of a line that I love. This is just a line that I'm wondering how this resonates for you. The line is, when you sing, you pray twice. Is that how you feel about music and singing? And what is it like for you to be involved in this beautiful global choir?
Oh my gosh, I've never heard that line, but I can relate to it. I think that singing, you know, can be a meditative practice when we're moving energy. Moving energy is like when we're doing breath work or Tai Chi or a lot of ways to move energy. But for me, singing has always just felt so good. And I'm a very minor member of the choir. I've never gone to LA and been there on the stage in person with them. It's one of my goals. One day I'll get there and do it. This is the global choir. So I'm in the videos when they show the videos of the global choir. But we practice every Sunday, and it's just I love going to practice. I love the songs that Marianne, our choir director, chooses are always like such spirit-filled songs, and they just to be in that space with everybody else harmonizing. And, you know, to me, it does feel like an experience of prayer when we do it.
That's lovely. That's so lovely. You even say that humming can relieve stress, never mind singing notes and words, that actually humming can relieve stress. How so?
I came to that bit of information late in life, and I've always been an incessant hummer. Like, I didn't understand it. I didn't know why. I don't know. I'm doing it half the time. People won't go to movies with me because I'll sit there and I hum throughout the movie. You know, my husband will occasionally, you know, stop and say, oh, where'd you pick up that one? Because it's often whatever's the last song I heard in the grocery store or whatever. And I didn't even realize I was doing it. But Deva Premal says that humming is a way to activate and balance your chakra system. That just using that vibration, that the vibration that you create when you're humming activates and balances your chakras.
Nice.
So I think some innate part of me must have known that. But yeah, it's a practice. People can do it.
I love that. There's so much that you talk about. And guys, you have to get this book again, because there's so much when you talk about feel to heal, how important it is to welcome every emotion, even the difficult ones, the sad and bad ones, that can help us connect with our joy. But I also love your analogy of how you tell people that when you're doing this work, imagine erasing everything on an old-fashioned Etch-a-Sketch board. You remember those red Etch-a-Sketch boards? Can you tell us more about how that can help us?
It's just something that came to me in a meditation once, because, you know, everybody is afraid of meditation because they think that they have to erase, you know, all their thoughts. Like, oh no, I've tried that. I can't stop my thoughts. Nobody can stop their thoughts. Our brains are machines on programs that we have very little control over. We can lessen our importance on our thoughts, lessen our attachments to our thoughts, but nobody can actually stop their thoughts. So when we're doing a dialogue with the vertical self, which is a lot of the work that we do in Joy School, is making that connection with our soul's wisdom, which feels very different from going to our brain for answers. When we're doing that, sometimes, you know, I look for different little tricks. And that was just a cute one that my Joy Schoolers seem to like, is to have that image of the Etch-a-Sketch and just go crazy with the knobs. So you get all that like wonky line filled screen and imagine, this is all the stuff that I believe I know about this problem that I'm going to meditate on, or this question that I'm going to go into my soul with. This is everything I believe I know about it. And then you just shake that weird silvery sand. So you have a nice blank, 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 blank screen.
Nice.
And then you go in for the wisdom.
Nice, nice. You know, you mentioned Dr. Wayne Dyer before, and he's had a huge impact on me as well. But I remember reading his book, The Power of Intentions, and I used to have those Power of Intention cards, and I just love them. And I love this as the Bliss Coach as well. Intentions are everything. Can you explain intention setting for our listeners and how important intention setting is in this kind of work?
Yeah, we do a lot in Joy School with a discernment practice to discern our cultured wants, our culture originated wants from our soul desires. So when we set an intention, we first want to get clear about why we're setting the intention. You know, a lot of times it's something that we've been told we should want. I have my own business, so I should want more money, more clients, more likes, or, you know, whatever it is. Like, these are the things I should want. So I'm going to set an intention to get more clients next year. Maybe your soul doesn't want more clients. Maybe you're feeding yourself, you're housing yourself, you have a nice work-life balance. Maybe you don't actually want more clients. That's completely fine. So we do a little discernment. And then when we're setting intentions from our soul, it's a much smoother path. We can really look then at, how does this feel when I think about this intention, this goal, this desire? Does my energy go down and collapse? Do I feel like dejected about it because I don't have it or I don't see how I'm going to get it? Or does it light me up? Do I feel my expansion in my energy? Because most people are just wanting incorrectly, right? We think like if I really, really envision this thing and I want it so hard and I pray for it so bad, we're just keeping it at arm's length, right? Because then most of our focus is on the not having of this thing. And again, our manifestations can't outrun our expectations. So we have to use whatever little inroads and then pull on those threads and pull it up and pull it up until we get to the place where we understand that this is completely feasible and doable and ours to have. And that's when the staircase appears to get us there. We have to be in the right energetic space to see the staircase. And we might see the whole staircase at once. We might just see the first step, but our soul will know that's the first step there. And once I take that step, the next step is going to appear. And it all depends on the energy that you start out an intention from.
Mm-hmm. It's lovely. I love the way how you talk about in the Buddhist tradition of being in the right relationship with something or someone who is very important. So you ask us to choose a relationship that might have unresolved issues and release whatever story you've associated with someone or something, knowing that that doesn't define you. And there's a meditation associated with this that ends with, I release you. I no longer need to hold on to this emotion. I release you from my life. It's very powerful. I really encourage listeners to do this meditation when they get the book, For Your Joy. Can you tell us more just briefly about that releasing meditation?
Yeah. When we get clear about how much these stored resentments, these blames, first of all, anytime we're blaming anything out there, we're not looking at it correctly. So we have like a walk around the statue exercise where we realize that we've only been looking at the statue from right here. And if we walk over here, it's going to look different.
It's a whole different vantage. Yes.
Yeah. So when we do that work to recognize not only how kind of fallible and silly our resentments and blaming of things are, but also how much they're pulling down our vibration. They're these anchors to our joy. We all know that forgiveness work isn't for the other person. It's not to let anybody off the hook. It's to let us live without that burden.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So that's what that particular meditation that you're talking about really facilitates is it starts as an intellectual understanding. When we intellectualize the process about like how not to our benefit it is to hold these grudges, then it kind of gets the opportunity to go into our energy and be more of a kerclunked understanding where the release can be real and genuine.
It's great. There's also a beautiful thing in the book where you say, if every morning you can find a reason to say, yes, it's going to be a beautiful day. And every day you find a reason to say, yes, it is a beautiful day. And every night you find a reason to say, yes, it was a beautiful day. Then one day you'll look back and easily say, yes, it was a beautiful life. And I've written here, Do Zanta Mata. What is so important about that philosophy?
Again, it's recognizing that there are always various ways to look at our day, our life, our situation. And when we've been looking at our problems, which is really human nature, right? We're like, you know, oh, I need this, this, and this to be happy. And okay, I got the nice, good place to live. So I'm going to throw that back here. Got it. Okay. Now, what do I still not have? Okay. I've got that partner that I was wanting. Throw it back here. Got it. Okay. What do I say? And we're so focused on what we don't have. And when we're focused on that energy, it just makes it harder to have the things we want. It makes it, we can get stuff just by efforting, but it's slow going. It's bumpy. It's not joyful. If we turn around and look at all that we have created and have genuine, genuine hearts overflowing with gratitude for that, it makes getting that so much easier and faster and smoother.
I love that you talk about the guru who says, in order to find something to be grateful for, you have to feel the gratitude first. There's so much to cover, and I know we have to wrap it. There's just a couple of things I want to tell the listeners to look for. There's a list as one of your automatic writing prompts. And to make this list, you begin with the words, I love. And it can include all the biggies and the smallies, you say. Capture it all, whatever pops into your mind. I really would encourage you all to get the book and do this exercise. It's one of the best. I love. And we can't go more into it now, except I want you to do it because you're going to feel great when you do. And it can be everything, people, relationships, things, circumstances, ideas, so much can go into that list and just write it till it exhausts you. It's great. I also love that you mentioned motivational guru Zig Ziglar, who I'm always quoting. And I love that when one of his students complained that all of this positive thinking stuff was great, but it didn't last. And Ziglar said, neither does showering. That's why I do it daily.
That's why I do it daily.
So good. I have to bring up, there's so many things. Thich Nhat Hanh talked about how feeling joy for others is a way to plant a garden inside of you. I really get this. This is one of the greatest sources of happiness. Can you briefly say more about this?
Yeah, that's the practice of relational joy, which is, you know, one of the Buddhist pillars. Mudita is a more formal exercise that's in the book about how you can practice relational joy. But when we start clearing ourselves of the muck, aligning more with the consciousness that's behind it, the felt sense of oneness really starts to kick in. You start to understand that you have that namaste lens where you really are seeing everybody as the consciousness that's behind whatever they're projecting, right? We're all the same consciousness. We're all just drops of water in the same ocean. And when you're having a crappy day and nothing's going your way, you can tap into the joy of someone else who's having a great day. Our lower vibration tendency would be to be jealous or resentful of that. But when we raise our vibration enough to be part of the oneness, we can have so much happiness and joy for someone else's success or minor win or accomplishment. And it's just another way to get joy. Why not get all the joy we can?
Yes. I believe in that so much. I love that. You also have a beautiful exercise that begins with, I love you. Can you just tell me briefly about Louise Hay's 85th birthday? How cool that you were there, by the way. Can you tell us about the beautiful hand mirror that she gave to all the guests that said, I love you on it, and what that meant to you?
Yeah, it's one of her most famous practices is to just look deeply into your own eyes in the mirror and say, I love you. And I have joy schoolers do it. A lot of people have a really hard time doing it. We're not really taught to love ourselves. Again, we kind of feel like being too easy on ourselves will make us lose our edge, right? Like, I like you okay today because you checked off your whole to-do list. But if you don't tomorrow, I'm not going to like you very much. You know, like it's just a practice. And it was one of Louise's sort of signature moves. And it's just really, really sweet to have that little mirror that says, I love you as a reminder of
Lovely.
That practice.
Lovely. What is your best advice and greatest golden nugget that you'd like for people to get out of your book, Free Your Joy?
It's woven in throughout it, but it's that word that it feels so cliche. People, I think, kind of jump to conclusions about it. But if there's just one thing, it would be the self-love piece, the self-compassion, because that changes everything in and of itself. Like everything else is icing on top of that. When we start letting ourselves off the hook for being ourselves, for being these human creatures that we came here to be, we came here, our consciousness, our little soul decided, I want to put myself into one of those really imperfect frameworks and see what I can do with it throughout my earth time. Everything in the collective is just what we have collectively created with our shared beliefs and intentions. Everything in our personal life is just what we've personally created. It's just life doing life. We came here to experience it. And the more we can get okay with that and get okay with us, the more our natural joy is going to be able to come into play.
Right. What is bliss for Lisa McCourt?
Oh my gosh, this connecting with beautiful souls like you. Truly, I think, you know, I spoke earlier about how I felt like such an alien on the planet. It is just like I wake up every day and pinch myself at the community I've been able to find.
Yes.
Because, you know, in the beginning, there would maybe be like one or two people in my life that I felt saw me. Understood yes. where I'm coming from because I was so weird, right? And to have this like beautiful tribe to understand now that I can create a bubble where everybody I talk to all day is like me and understands me and has the enthusiasm for these principles like you do, Judy, that is to me bliss.
Yeah, lovely. Well, I got to tell you, you're really giving a gift to the world and making the world a better place with this book. Like this book honestly has so much in it. It should be a course. I see why it's a course. I see why it should take a year. And I encourage you all to do it because it's going to make your life better. There's no question. I just loved it. And I'm so grateful to have had you on this program. And I want to ask you, what is the best way for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, and get a copy of Free Your Joy?
Thank you, Judy. Yeah, Free Your Joy is sold everywhere books are sold. Most people go to Amazon. You know, if you have an independent bookseller, go there. My website is my name, Lisa McCourt, LISAMCCOURT.com. My courses are there. I do the ongoing Joy School, which is always enrolling. And I have 3-month intensive programs where I work privately with people for 3 months. That's always going on there. Sometimes there's a live event or a retreat there, just depending on, you know, when this airs and when people go to the site. And on social media, I am not the best at all my social media. So I would suggest go to Lisa McCourt Author on Facebook, which is my personal page. I have a Joy School page, but I don't do as much there. Go friend me on my personal page. I put joy there every day. I post personal things as well as work things, because to me, it's all one and the same. And that's the best place to connect on social.
I want to thank you. So it really has been joyful. Thank you again.
Thank you, Judy. I appreciate you.
Of course. Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Lisa McCourt, who is living their bliss, but also really helping all of us to live ours as well. If you're an author, artist, yoga, meditation, or mindfulness expert, or really anyone who has found and is following their bliss, we would love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer-songwriters or musicians on the show. If you're a singer, please reach out to us. I'm also the Bliss Coach. If I can help you in any way, let me know. You can reach out and connect with me at findyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And of course, you can always follow us at the Bliss Minute on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Lisa McCourt, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Meg Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Olivia Weatherall, audio engineer Juliana Yannunciello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsors, the Create Fertility Center and Silvering. For everyone here, I'm Judy Leivrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.